Good morning. Welcome to In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco and he's Al Hensel. How are you, Al?
I'm doing really well, Bob. How about yourself?
Not bad for a very lovely morning. The rain is stopping and we're going to have a very lovely rest of the week as
we
take this.
Oh my goodness. And I got to tell you, Bob, your listeners know by now that I study climate. I love meteorology. The biggest thing that I wish I could ever do in this world is to come up with a model that will allow for 100% forecasting. But I'll tell you, so that aside, we've gotten just in the last month in eastern Massachusetts, probably about 8 to 9 inches of rain. And it's well needed, too, because all of last year, as you may recall, we were under the gun in a drought situation. It was just really, I think, miserable for a lot of people, especially those who have a green thumb and love to water gardens or do flowers and beautification around their yards, etc. So yes. Hopefully this year we won't have to struggle so much against that. Bob, there's one little surprise that I wanted to throw at you. Before we get into the meat of today's podcast, I'd like to ask you, for the benefit of your listeners, myself included, to give us a brief summation of what is going to be happening with you and your alum this upcoming weekend.
When this airs, it'll be over with.
I know, but to give all of us an idea, though.
I will be going on my 40th class reunion, but I need to tell my listeners that you're listening to this program right now. The reunion is over.
Okay.
So there's no point of me saying I'm going to the reunion.
Right.
When this airs, the reunion will be passed.
Okay.
So that would not make too much sense.
Fair enough.
Anyway, I want to start off by talking about driverless cars. I need a couple of minutes to vent about this subject. And then, of course, Al, feel free to chime in anytime you want to. A lot of people are in love with the concept of driverless cars, especially people who feel that it's going to solve every single transportation problem for blind people. Oh, yeah, just put a blind person in a driverless car and everything is going to be kumbaya. Well, I'm sure that the manufacturers are going to try their best to make the product work. Why not? People have told me that eventually every car is going to be driverless. My problem with that, of course, is it's going to put people out of work. Everybody who drives for a living will be out of work. Our economy is going to be almost ruined. And for people ages 50, 60, 65, they're not going to find a new line of employment if they've been driving all of their lives. So what are they going to do? Second of all, driverless cars are run by people who are human. So in other words, human beings make the cars. The cars are fallible. So you're telling me that if I get into a driverless car, knowing nothing about how a car works, I'm expected to believe that the car is going to drive on Route 95 at the speed limit and avoid everything by itself. Oh, yeah, defenders will say, well, that's better than having a drunk behind the wheel. Well, of course, who does want a drunk behind the wheel? I'm not promoting having a drunk behind the wheel. We don't want drunks behind the wheel. But let's be real about the fact that if a lot of people right now in this world don't know anything about cars and how they work, then how is it expected that those same people are going to all of a sudden know how to program a driverless car? So there are a lot of problems that I see with this, and I think that people in this country and throughout the world, especially people with vision problems, have a lot more practical things to worry about than looking forward to a driverless car. And one other thing that I want to point out about it, too. The car, from what I understand, is going to be pre-programmed to go wherever you want it to go. So it's taking you to point B from point A. How do you stop it if you want to take a pee? Let's be real about this. What do you do? What does somebody with no vision do who never learned how to drive for that simple fact, and now they're in a driverless car? So my ranting is all done. I mean, I have an open mind. If somebody wants to convince me that this is going to work, I'll let them try to do that. I just don't see it right now. There are a lot of practical issues why I think it's a dangerous situation to be in a driverless car, traveling at 65 on Route 95 with all types of other variables in its way. Your thoughts, Al?
Okay. So, Bob, first off, you and I have had a pre-discussion on this, and my feelings about driverless cars is that when the United States, when, you know, testing is such to the point where that technology is ready to be rolled out, if I'm still alive or sentient, I greatly look forward to the day where I have an opportunity to purchase a driverless car. The reasons, number one, it's not going to happen overnight. We're probably, Bob, another 10 to 20 years out, and I'm just guessing at this based on the way testing goes on products. This is a potentially very dangerous situation for systems and subsystems that are going to have to be put into place in order to allow that car to be driverless to work properly. They're going to literally, before they can tell a person, okay, you can now sit in your driverless car and go, there are obviously going to have to be tests done to make sure that those, once the systems have been deemed as safe, and they're a long way, Bob, as you know, from that point right now, having had accidents and pilot studies with driverless cars, they've actually...
Why am I not surprised?
Well, sure. And that's... And I kind of fault, you know, whoever were the folks behind, you know, deeming them safe enough to allow cars to be out on the road driving around on their own. Those deaths... very serious. People who knew those people are waking up today with an unfathomable loss, and nobody can give life back except for our Lord. So my point here, Bob, is, yeah, there are terrible, tragic mistakes that have already been made regarding the testing of driverless cars. It's a long way from being done, but the positive ramifications of this, once it is perfected, are just, you know, unlimited. And it will allow people, myself, legally blind, people in our position, people who might just, for one reason or another, may choose not to drive. It'll open up a whole new world of mobility for us. And there's no difference in my mind, Bob, regarding getting oneself roadworthy and put into a driverless car. There's no difference in getting that person roadworthy than there is a driver going down, learning the rules of the road through the registration, taking their written test for eventual driver's license, and then going out on the road, practicing with folks to learn how to become driver road ready. And I fully expect, and it would be irresponsible otherwise if the system doesn't put these requirements in place, that people will have to take a test or a series of tests to make sure that they're driver ready. You were telling me last week, Bob, something that absolutely almost caused me to fall right out of my chair. And that was, you were saying there are people who are saying to you, and correct me if I've got some of the wording wrong, but that there's going to be a point where we will be required to go driverless in driverless,
yes,
cars by ourselves.
You heard correctly.
I simply do not believe that. Whoever said that to you probably should go back and reread the facts about the progress of this right now, because number one, it's going to have to be legislated at some point on the federal or state level before it can even be mandated or put into place. And number two, it will never become, Bob, it would never become a mandate that you, if you ever want to get from point A to point B, you have to get into a driverless car. No,
well,
that's going to be your point, your choice.
Two points. You use the word mandate.
Yeah.
Now, maybe the person who is all excited about the driverless cars who spoke to me implied that there would be a mandate, and that's why she expects everybody to ride in driverless cars.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that. My second point is, you were talking about people taking tests.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you're asking people to take tests that never took tests.
No, you're not.
You and I never took tests.
No, that's, Bob, hold on. This is great, because this is our first disagreement, our discord. No, that's not what I meant to say. What I meant to say was, it will always be, in my opinion, as screwed up as this country is politically right now, Bob, there will never be a point where people will demand that you do anything, let alone make the choice before you take a test to go driverless. It will be I have total faith still in the Constitution of the United States to come out and say to you, Bob, or any of our listeners, that no, it'll never be a mandate. It will always start as a choice. So here's how I see the process working. All of a sudden, the folks, the powers that be, have deemed, after extensive testing, which will probably take at least 10 years, that driverless cars are theoretically, let's say, 99.999999% safe, that the accident rates are lower than somebody getting on a plane and flying. Let's say we've gotten to that level of standard. And let's say everybody's in agreement. Yes, driverless cars are that safe. Now it's time to roll out the program. Okay, here we go. During that process, Bob, there will never be a point where they will come to me or you or anybody else and say, you have to go driverless car and you have to take this test. It'll always come down to choice.
That wasn't what I was responding to.
Okay.
I was responding to your reference about the Registry of Motor Vehicles and how there'll be some sort of a test to people on how to handle a driverless car.
Mm-hmm.
My response is that you've got people right now who never drove because of blindness or whatever reason. How can they go to the registry when the driverless cars are on the road? What can they do? They can't do that
because
what are you testing the blind people on?
Well, now, hold on. Okay, Bob. So let's get real here. First off, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and have 100% of every vehicle driverless with a mandate that if you're going to go somewhere, you have to be in a driverless car.
No, but okay.
So just project this. So let's say a person has never taken a registry test. They're totally blind. Number one, they're the perfect candidate to go driverless. Again, if it's been deemed safe. Okay. So they're the first people, I think, that advocacy groups will target. And I don't mean to use that in a harsh or negative sense. I mean as a positive sense. So let's say you get an email tomorrow and it says, Mr. Branco, given that you are a sight-impaired individual, you've never driven before, we would like to help you in a program to allow you to gain 100% road independence. This is what we have in mind. We'd like to pick you up or go to your house and go over the ins and outs of how to drive, how to navigate in a driverless car. There are some safety features built in that you can use by pressing buttons that will allow the car to safely move to the side of the road.
I hope it's speech accessible.
And of course, it would have to be, Bob. Of course. If they want to roll this out to everybody or anybody who is sentient enough, cognitive enough, to get behind a wheel, figuratively, get into a car that you have to have some control over, at least to keep it safe. That has got to be a number one requirement before this program can ever attain universal validity. That has to be one of the situations where you would be trained to in effect shut that car down if you feel something is going wrong. So the situation or scenario that I see, and I'm imagining it, is either a friend picking you up and bringing you to a place where you can be trained to navigate that driverless car, or a group coming to you and meeting with you and going through the steps of how this would work and how you would remain safe. And then if at any point you decide this isn't for me, everything stops.
Do you think that there would be advanced warning that the system is about to fail?
There would have to be, Bob, because the idea is to prevent an accident from occurring. There would have to be a safety warning. If a circuit shuts down, there's got to be a beep, or a fuse completely disconnects and breaks the car to a stop. Obviously not in a way that's going to hurt you if you're going 65 down a highway. But it would have to—you would have to have all kinds of safety, measures put into that car to protect you. Yes,
and
absolutely.
And it would pull over to the breakdown lane, probably.
I would think so. If it could, I would think it would. It would have to try. Let's understand why there's this movement, though, Bob. If theoretically every car on the road were driverless, that would mean that there are sensors that would tell it that there's something in front of it too close. It would allow it to brake. It would be able to turn, correctly. It would be able to do everything by computer to prevent a crash. Can you imagine overall, and I'm not saying there wouldn't be tragic mishaps. There are tragic mishaps every day. You and I have known people that have gotten hit and killed by cars crossing a street. We both know people that's happened to. So there's always going to be tragic accidents, Bob. But can you imagine if this works as advertised eventually, how many lives this is going to actually save?
Absolutely.
Amazing. And I can't. But so the idea here is don't let people scare you into thinking that you have to do this. From the beginning, this will be by choice. You will not be told that you have to do this. You will be asked if you'd like to at some point, maybe, if it comes within our lifetime. I still have questions about that, Bob. You and I may be in nursing homes at 95 years old before they're able to implement this. Who knows?
But one more question relating to driverless cars. Sure. What about the economy, as I said at the introduction? If we eventually are all going to be riding in driverless cars, what happens to the job market? I've heard defenders of driverless cars tell me that there have been job shifts in the past, and there will be another job shift. But how much more of a job shift can the economy handle?
What are the
alternatives to pizza delivery men, UPS drivers, cab drivers, bus drivers? Especially, like I said, for the 50 and 60-year-olds who may not want to learn anything new.
Well, I think, Bob,
will be there?
That's a good question, and I don't have a direct answer for you that's going to make you feel better. What I can say is there is a model that we can look at right now if you care to go to like tech news and business news publications. Second son works in a company that does manual manufacturing, and he's very worried. He's not in the manufacturing process. He's a process engineer, so his job's not in danger, but he's worried about friends who work on the floor possibly losing their jobs to robotics, to automation.
That's a subject for another podcast.
That's going on now, Bob.
This whole economy is about to collapse if things aren't rearranged properly.
So I think hopefully people in this country get that transition process for those who need it correct. It will, and let's again face it, Bob. Pizza delivery people won't be threatened. Their jobs won't be threatened probably at least for another 10 to 20 years. Because I don't see driverless cars being 100% on the road probably for another, 30, 40, 50 years.
No, and I'm not putting a timetable on it. I'm just projecting down the road. the economy is going to be in for a tremendous impact if everybody who drives for a living is not going to drive anymore.
If it's cut off at that quickly, that's correct. Now, let's say that in 20 years, a child is born. In 37 or 38 years, that child is ready to go out into the economy. Are their parents, are their high school teachers, as driverless cars become more and more implemented into the mainstream, are those people going to be saying, listen, you know, a pizza delivery job or a taxi cab driver or even a truck driver, Bob, let's even go higher than the pizza delivery driver. How about the truck driver who makes $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year driving freight? Those people are probably going to be in flux as well. So the idea is for the government and for the industry to start educating generations as they begin coming up so that they can be ready for that eventual transition. And that might be, you know, driving a truck in 40 years may not be a very good option to take as a high schooler coming out. Maybe instead they could choose another vocation, Bob.
Exactly.
So I think it's going to be something that's going to be slowly learned over time as driverless cars are implemented in.
All right, I want to switch gears and talk about
Before you do, have I at least gotten you to pause and rethink this situation again?
As I listen back and relax in my easy chair.
All right.
I'll listen to what you had to say.
Good. Okay, Bob.
I'll keep an open mind. I want to thank CJoy Internet Radio for scheduling In Perspective on their station. Daryl Breffy, thank you very much. Okay. I listen to primetime television, and I'll tell you, there are many drug ads that tell us to take these wonder drugs, for lack of a better term, you know, to take them for different ailments. I'd say that 10% of the commercial tells you how good the drug is, and 90% gives you all the reasons why somebody should not take it, and it lists all of these horrible side effects. Alan, I'm at the point now where I'm scared to take most of these drugs because of what I hear, from what I hear on television. Well, this is going to cause liver damage. It's going to cause muscle ache. It's going to cause vomiting. It might even kill you. You might even grow fangs. I made that last one up.
I know. That was good, Bob.
I think you get my point that I understand why commercial ads are probably designed for that for a reason, because of potential lawsuits, but they really do put a scare in the consumer. Don't you agree?
Yes. Well, and as we talked last week, a few days ago, Bob, part of it is disclosure laws about the side effects of drugs that have to be stated and not at, remember when that first started, they had people talking really fast, they just ramp up the speed of the recording.
And my God.
Disclaimers, Bob. I mean, even the most astute audio engineer wouldn't have been able to understand what was being said. So now they've slowed it down. They've put it to a point where we have to listen to that. And let's face it, every drug has side effect risks, every single one. And the thing is when they talk about death, they're probably basically saying that, yes, people within our study group have died as a direct result of this drug, but it may be, say, 1 in 200 or 300, maybe less, I don't know. But, yes, I can see where that's a very, very scary thing. And, again, it comes down to more – is more knowledge too much? That's the question. Is too much knowledge bad?
I'm glad we have this knowledge. That's very, very important.
Yeah, yeah.
But what that tells me is that how many of these wonder drugs then are going to benefit as many people as we think they're going to benefit if there are all these side effects? Let me take me for a quick example.
Sure.
I'm supposed to take a statin for a cholesterol reading that's slightly above the normal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, this statin might cause very serious side effects, so I have to make a choice. Would I rather risk damaging my liver, or would I rather live with a 238 cholesterol reading? Now, keep in mind, Alan, that 10 years ago, a 238 cholesterol reading was normal. Somebody somewhere along the line lowered the cholesterol standards. So it wasn't you and I that are pigging out any differently. It's that someone lowered the standard.
Yeah, and I guess two things, Bob. I also have been taking a statin now since 1998. And at that time, almost 20 years ago, my cholesterol level was at pretty close to 250, 245. It's now down to like 179. But I'm aware of all the side effect risks that are involved. And I happen to have a great doc who monitors all of the potential harmful effects of that statin. And we have a relationship, Dr. Cohan and myself, that if it comes to a point where she thinks that we're getting into a danger area, she will make suggestions or let me know what the risks would be or what the symptoms are at that point. And then at that point, we will both agree that I should, you know, do something else. So I think it all comes down to this, Bob. And we haven't even discussed pharma's, P-H-A-R-M-A industry, as their whole contribution to this. They want to make money, so therefore they want to sell more drugs, and they want to spin them to be wonder drugs. And some of them aren't, clearly. They're found, they're taken off the market. There are a few drugs that have been out of the chute, FDA approved and everything, as great drugs. This is going to cure your heart attack. It's going to, you know, stop strokes altogether. And then we find out it causes another dangerous side effect that's too risky, and then they end up taking it off the market.
Well, I know this.
So let me just conclude this point, Bob. It all comes down to a balancing act of risk reward. If you have a good physician, you have a good relationship, you know over time the drug you're taking, although it's keeping you out of the hospital from having a stroke maybe or a heart attack maybe down the road, those risks will eventually rear themselves at some point in your life. And at that point, you may have to pull back on that drug and, just do the best you can to maximize your quality of life.
Well, here's what's interesting. If I take a certain block of time in the afternoon, say from 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon on network television, let's say there are, for the sake of the discussion, 25 advertisements during that time block, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if 18 out of the 25 ads are for wonder drugs.
So we're looking at about 70 to 80%
yep.
of all ads, yeah.
And every single one of those ads, for the most part, tell you why you should not take it.
Right.
And like I said, I don't think they mean to scare people, but it gives a lot of us, myself included, food for thought here.
Yes.
What's worse? What's worse, the condition that's being treated by the wonder drug, or what's going to happen if I take the wonder drug?
Can I make one summary statement for any of those people who are listening to us and maybe their heads are spinning for some reason? Okay, so here's what I'd like to say, everybody, Bob, you, me included. Listen to those ads. Understand the potential risks as well as the reward of that drug. Hopefully you have a general practitioner, a physician who you can put your trust in that you think is going to look out for you. And if you don't, then you have to weigh the risks that you see with the rewards that are being proposed. So either way, just know the good and the bad and be prepared to either say no, Bob. And I think you did an admirable thing. So just prepare to say no. You did a hell of an admirable thing, I thought. You had told me about your physician putting you on a statin several months ago, and you made a conscious decision based on the risks to hold off on taking that drug. My point here is, anybody, if you get a doctor who prescribes something for you and you weigh the whole all aspects of it, you don't have to take that drug. You don't have to necessarily do what they suggest you do. It's ultimately your choice. You can say no. And, Bob, you did the courageous thing by doing just that. So
I think
that's basically just so know the ups and downs. Know the good and the bad. Know the risks and the reward. Yep. And you're going to have to make good, intelligent decisions as you go along based on your best chance for quality of life.
Well, we'll never know if the statin would have caused side effects in me, but sometimes you've got to make the decision and weigh all the pros and cons.
That's correct.
I'm afraid our time has expired. It's been a great show, Alan.
It was great dialogue,
and I really, really appreciate you spending time with me this morning and doing another edition of In Perspective.
I look forward to the next one, Bob. And thank you, everybody. And once again, Bob, you know, this is hopefully this will give some folks a little bit more to think about.
Thank you again.